every life transformed by medicine is a story. One that often begins with an investigator with a fresh idea. An idea that turns into a study and that ultimately advances patient care. Only innovation can truly help our patients live longer, healthier lives. Hello, my name is Dr. Kristen Siamber, and I'm an associate professor of medicine at the Vanderbilt Ingram Cancer Center. This is the monthly podcast of ACRU, the Cancer Research Network, whose mission is to establish the next level study for cancer research across the major disease groups. In this podcast, we want to hear the stories behind the innovative ideas and listen to the unique journeys of our researchers. Listen in as we explore the people and ideas of today's leading translational research. Welcome to the ACRU Transformative Research Podcast. My name is Dr. Kristen Siamber, and I'm excited to host this episode as we explore the stories and innovation of today's leading translational research. Our special guest today is Dr. Shebly Atrash. Dr. Atrash specializes in hematology oncology at the Levine Cancer Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, and is clinically experienced in amyloidosis, myelodysplasia, myelofibrosis, and multiple myeloma, among other hematologic diseases. He has research interests focusing on plasma cell disorders, particularly CAR T therapy and high-risk multiple myeloma. Shebly, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you for the nice introduction.
Before we talk about your current research, I'd love to hear about what drew you into hem-onc in the first place. I always find that it's really interesting how everyone comes into this field for a different reason or something that led them to pursue this. So tell us what that was for you.
After I finished my residency for internal medicine, I moved into the University of Arkansas for medical sciences. And at that time, there was the Myeloma Institute for Research and Therapy, MIRT. That's where I started my first job. I was a hospitalist in the MIRT, seeing myeloma patients, working with research in myeloma. Over there, I met two great myeloma leaders, Dr. Bart Balogi, who was the head of the Myeloma Institute for Research and Therapy there, and also Dr. Saad Osmani. Both were great mentors. I learned a lot from both mentors. Saad was directly supervising my research work there. We did quite a few projects. I learned the passion for research from that time. We did a lot of work on myeloma. Clearly, to me, was high-risk myeloma was the greatest challenge. At that time, a lot of the drugs that we use here nowadays as standard of care were still in the research arena. Pomalidomide, carfilzomib, all those drugs that are taken for granted now, at that time, they were still under development. And I kind of witnessed those drugs go from being drugs for compassionate use or for relapse refractory multiple myeloma in clinical trial setting, all the way, for example, with carfilzomib, all the way to newly diagnosed multiple myeloma patients, and I witnessed the history. So it's an exciting story. I think myeloma is an exciting field. There's a lot of research ongoing in myeloma nowadays. It's hard to keep up with all the new drugs. And I think that's what sparked the interest for research in me.
That's an interesting story. And talk about working with the leaders in the field from the get-go. So that must have been a really exciting for you. As you know, I'm a GI oncologist. But a little known fact about me is that my very first lab experience was in a multiple myeloma lab in college. And so in the summer between, I think, my sophomore and junior year, I worked in Bill Dalton's lab at Moffitt. So I do have a little bit of understanding of myeloma, but I will definitely leave it to you because, as you said, there are so many drugs now, and which is a great thing, but even just trying to figure out how to sequence them, how to best utilize them, minimizing toxicities, all those things, I think are still really big challenges.
That's correct. There are a lot of areas in myeloma that are still lagging behind. I have to say most of the advancements we had so far are in the standard risk myeloma, and the improvement in the high risk myeloma is still lacking behind.
And is that just a biologic thing? Is it a toxicity thing? What do you think we need to improve in high risk multiple myeloma?
I think understanding biology is the first step here, because the targets that we are after, especially with immune therapies, seem to be working really well, seems to changing the story of multiple myeloma. But for high-risk myeloma, it seems that the target is always moving. There's no optimal target that we can go after all the time. Any of the drugs that we're using is, at least to what we know so far, is not curable, which means, as you know, Dr. Borlaughi used to say, if you're not curing it, it will come back more aggressive later on. And that's what we're dealing with right now with multiple myeloma. So either we are dealing with high-risk myeloma from diagnosis, which is very difficult to treat, or we're getting more high-risk with each relapse that after each treatment. And myeloma plasma cells always learn how to fight back. So finding an optimal target, understanding the biology, why it's becoming more refractory, why it's becoming more aggressive, is truly the key here. And hopefully, you know, curing. If we can cure standard risk myeloma early on, then we'll avoid a lot of high risk myeloma years down the road.
I was thinking in my mind the high risk from diagnosis, but you make a really good point that if you don't cure it, it comes back more aggressive. And we see that with a lot of tumors and just the resistance that develops and everything else. So that's an important problem. And it seems like even in myeloma, like many other tumors, you're seeing patients being diagnosed younger and younger too, which is another really hard problem to tackle as well.
That's correct. And I have to say that it seems like for the younger population, you get more high-risk patients. For newly diagnosed multiple myeloma, the true high-risk population is about 15%. Mm-hmm. So when we design clinical trials, what happens is those 15% get diluted with the general population. So we don't get much information about the high-risk specifically population. You don't have a clinical trials, or you have very few clinical trials that can target exactly high-risk population only. Most of the newly diagnosed multiple myeloma trials will be more applicable to standard of care or standard risk than it is for high risk patients.
So you know that this isn't a CRU podcast. I know that you do conduct clinical trials through a CRU as well as other mechanisms. I understand you have an active study right now with a CRU. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
My interest in high risk multiple myeloma. And as we mentioned, the number of high-risk multiple myeloma, especially at the earlier lines, is much less than standard risk. So to design any clinical trial that can give us information that is applicable for high-risk patients, we truly need a large network with multiple hospitals so we can accrue from multiple sites at the same time so we can get enough numbers to make any meaningful conclusions. And here I got introduced to the ACRU, which is a great network of hospitals. Through ACRU, I got a lot of help. First, I had to present my clinical trial to the Myeloma Disease Working Group. After I got the interest, I got it approved. We went through to work with biostatistics team and biology team, lab team, and protocol building and writing up team. So we submitted the protocol. We went through a lot of revisions to make sure, you know, everything is as accurate as possible. Also, ACRU helped me with the contracting with the funding from pharma company and with the different centers that are going to be part of the trial. So those are the most, in my experience, those are the most difficult steps in any IIT is connecting the dots, and ACRU provided to that nice network of connections. Mm-hmm. The trial targets a high risk multiple myeloma patients after 1 to 3 lines of treatment. We know that the CANDOR regimen, which is daratumumab, carfilzomib, and dexamethasone, showed great results in multiple myeloma patients after one relapse, one prior line. And the addition of daratumumab to carfilzomib increased the response rates and provided much better progression-free survival. However, as we mentioned, this trial is more geared toward all myeloma comers. It's not specifically for high-risk patients. We know also that high-risk patients have dismal outcomes. So what we did is we used the CANDOR regimen as backbone, and we added another drug, selinexor, to help us with getting better responses for high-risk myeloma. Now, selinexor was tested in multiple other clinical trials. You could see the Boston clinical trial give us a subset analysis for patients with 17p deletion and multiple myeloma. It seemed that adding selinexor to bortezomib and dexamethasone did give us superior outcomes for patients with 17p deletion. Granted, this is a subset analysis, so there are a lot of extrapolations coming out of that. It's just more hypothesis generating. It's not confirming this finding, but it makes sense to utilize selinexor for high-risk population and using a backbone that we know it's very effective for multiple myeloma. And that's how we came up with the idea. So we're using quadruplet regimen, daratumumab, carfilzomib, dexamethasone, and we're adding selinexor for it. The study will have a run-in phase to make sure the safety signals are maintained and watched closely. And also it will have an interim analysis to reassure the efficacy signal is there as well before we enroll full population. And I have to say that we got a lot of help from a crew biostat team in getting the actual numbers.
That sounds like a really exciting study. And you didn't realize you're helping me study for my heme recertification. So learning the high-risk features. From my experience with the crew, I really enjoy working with the consortium because, as you mentioned, there's a great infrastructure. It really brings together the academic and community practices. And the investigators are just really top-notch. And they really pushed you, I think, to make the best investigator-initiated trials. So I'm glad that you had a good experience with that, too. And it's exciting to hear about that. So what is the timeline for your study? Is it open yet? Is it about to open? And how many patients will be accrued?
Regarding timelines, we opened the study already. Actually, I enrolled my first patient to the study.
Congratulations.
Absolutely, and he's doing great. No issues there. We're still waiting for the depth of response and assessment, but we just barely started now. We have 7 other centers. I have to say that accrual was very valuable here, and it's a good to note that most of the trials we struggle to find centers. With accrual, I had the other way around. I have more centers are interested than I could fund even.
Wow.
So I had to pick and choose, and that's a good value for accrual, and we picked 7 other centers. Some of them are about to open any day now. Other centers might lack behind, but that's kind of a process that we have to go through. The trial will enroll about 42 patients. We'll do our first 14 patients with a run-in phase just to make sure we don't have any problems there. And the interim analysis will be done at that time. The primary endpoint is to achieve. We're not looking at only response. We're looking at MRD negativity, 10 to minus 5, which is a new target that a lot of trials now are moving towards that instead of looking only for complete response. I think it's a novel target. It's a novel endpoint, for the trial. And I think it's if we get a good signal with that depth of response, it will predict a longer progression-free survival. And of course, in this trial, we're going to be looking at progression-free survival, at overall survival, also at the depth of response according to the IMWG criteria. That's where we're going.
Congratulations on enrolling your first patient. That's always a really neat milestone, after, especially after you work so hard to get an IIT up and going, and you finally see patients getting the chance to potentially benefit. So that's really exciting. Well, we look forward to hearing more about the trial as it goes on, and certainly encourage the sites to open and to enroll. But it sounds like this is going to be a really successful one. So wish you the best of luck.
Actually, building on that, I'm about to open a second one as well through Accru. Oh. And I think we're very close. We're going through the final review of the protocol and contracting. So it's an exciting mechanism that I encourage everybody to utilize it. It's this resource we have there. Why not using?
And it's interesting because the different disease groups have really been expanding. So of course, I'm in the GI committee of Accru, and that's been a really active committee for the last few years, but it's really nice to see the other groups really develop and build upon prior successes too. You've obviously had a lot of experience and success in clinical research and translational research. What advice would you have for junior investigators just getting started in terms of either things that you've learned over the years or things that you see? Because the field is changing and research itself has changed. And as you were talking about, with just different endpoints, and it's hard to keep up. So what advice would you give to people just getting into the field in terms of what they can do to be successful?
I feel that academics is changing a lot. I feel the key point for any new person joining academics and interested in research is to truly get involved. Get involved with committees, get involved with discussions with other key holders. That's the main issue, whether it's getting involved with committees in ASH, in ASCO, in SWOG, in Accru, and any other platforms that where you can get in touch with investigators, be part of the discussion. Because by the time you design your trial, especially with IITs, it has to go through a lot of vetting, it has to go through a lot of back and forth discussions. You're going to learn a lot through the process about how to increase your enrollment rates, how to modify your inclusion and exclusion criteria. And truly, a small tip from key opinion leader in the field could change the trial and improve it by a lot. So getting involved with discussions is very important, also because from the time when the idea starts or sparked until the trial is open, there will be a very important time where your endpoints have to be designed and your trial has to be designed for the future, counting for the time needed for building up the protocol and enrolling patients. So you truly have, for your results to be applicable, especially in myeloma, you have to kind of read where the future is going, and that's very important to get meaningful results.
It's definitely something I didn't know when I first, and I'm still learning on a day-to-day basis probably, because you really do have to think beyond where we currently are because of the time it takes to get these trials done, and oftentimes by the time a trial is done or the results are known, you're three steps ahead, and so you need to be able to interpret those results. So if you can start that process early on, already thinking ahead, then you're that much further along. So that's great advice. How about outside of work? What kind of hobbies or pursuits do you have outside of medicine? What keeps you balanced?
I like sports a lot. I like soccer, which is football. I also like running, so I run almost every day when time allows. We also organize those 5K runs for myeloma. We run with patients. It's a lot of fun. So to keep up with those events, I have to stay in shape. But yeah, I feel the best way for me to de-stress, to, you know, enjoy time is through sports, truly.
Great, physically, but also psychologically, especially when we have such hard jobs too, emotionally, I feel like. Finally, have you read anything, any exciting books or interesting books lately, or anything that's piqued your interest outside of medicine?
I like reading books. I'm not the super reader, but I like books. It's a good way to act out of medicine. I kind of go over a few of them every now and then.
It's so hard to balance because we do so much reading in our day jobs, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's important to, you actually can learn a lot from that's applicable to your job even by reading different things. So I always try to keep that up as well. Well, thank you so much for being on our podcast today. I think this has been wonderful. I've certainly learned a lot about myeloma, and you've inspired me to continue my heme certification, recertification. So definitely a success. And we wish you all the best with your studies through ACRU and elsewhere. And hopefully we'll see you at ASCO.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to meeting you.
And thank you too to our listeners, and hope to join you next time. Thank you.